I've been really concerned, as we all have, with these polls that have been taken of kids from Christian homes. They go off to college, and the great majority of them leave the faith. And a lot of them, I don't know great majority, but many of them, you know, they're confronted with evidences that they don't know what to do with, that they've not been well taught at home and in the church, and you know, they're just ripe for picking. And I would like to stem those losses and to minimize those losses. And that's why I wrote this book. The fossil record should not be one of the reasons why a Christian young person leaves the faith. It really shouldn't be that way. And so I wrote this book particularly for this hypothetical young sophomore from a Christian home that goes to college and gets hammered with the freshman level fossil course and is taught that the Bible is wrong and that there is no such thing as, I mean, Christianity is false. And I'm concerned about that kind of Christian student. Is there a way to salvage that person? To graduate them from college with their faith still intact? And that's really the purpose of this book. While I was doing that, I learned so much about the fossil record. I had no clue. And we'll talk about some of that tonight. I want to show you that the fossil record, in fact, I've grown up at ICR, grown up. I mean, I've been a colleague of Dwayne Gish. I mean, his office was next door, and we'd go to lunch every day, you know. And he's always talking about there are no transitional forms. And he beats that drum, and his book, Evolution of the Fossil, say no. And it's the titles that came after that. That was the drum he beat. And he beat it so well that there are no transitional forms between the major categories of fossils. And that's kind of what I thought about the fossils. But the more I started looking at the fossils, and the fossils' message is not just a negative message. There's a real positive statement that creationists can latch onto with these fossils. And the fossil record is not just to avoid the loss. Hey, we win with the fossil record. We win. Let's win. Let's take this and win with it. If you don't mind, I'm going to sit down. You know, when I was in, I guess, grade school, I was taught that evolution is true, and one of the reasons we know evolution is true is because as humans we evolved from four-legged creatures, and now that we're standing up on two legs, that we have back troubles. And everybody has back trouble. Anybody here have back trouble? Come on, everybody raise your hand. Yes, we do have back troubles. I have terrible back trouble. So I'm sitting on a stool, whether you like it or not. I'm sitting on a stool, and actually, back trouble has nothing to do with evolution. If you lift a piano and hurt your back, it has nothing to do with evolution. Just a life of poor posture and lifting wrong, and that's where the back trouble. By the way, did you know that four-legged animals have more back trouble than two-legged humans? So that obviously cannot be a solid argument. It's just one of those propaganda pieces that evolution has, and we can put that one to rest. But let's talk about the fossil record. It's not just a problem for evolution. It's a good proof of creation. I did write this book, The Fossil Record. There's a problem with this book. It's got a lot of pictures inside that are absolutely gorgeous. Just gorgeous pictures. And I was talking to Lloyd Anderson a while ago. He says he's trying to read through the book, but he's about the first person I've met that is reading through the book. Everybody else, they buy the book and look at pictures. It's just a beautiful book. But actually, I wrote the book and put the captions on the pictures so that if that's what you're doing is you can look through the pictures and you read the captions, you get the point of the book. Anyway, it was a fun book. I learned a lot. By the way, in the introduction to the book, it tells how to get PowerPoint slides of all the pictures in the book plus others. That you could get that PowerPoint talk. It's on the web from ICR. And then you could give your own PowerPoint talk on fossils. And it'll be similar to what I'm doing here tonight. But so it's in the book. In fact, there's a whole stack of them over here. I don't know if ICR sent those or if those are from the local group. But anyway, there's a bunch of fossil record books. Let's remind ourselves about evolution. Evolution is this idea of descent from a common ancestor, that all of life goes back to a common ancestor. That some 3 to 4 billion years ago, non-living chemicals just got together and made a cell, a living cell that could survive and assimilate its food and reproduce. And in the process of reproduction, through mistakes in that reproduction process, through mutations, this thing has descended into the vast array of plants and animals that we see alive today and in the fossil record. This kind of thing evolved into marine invertebrates, which evolved into fish, which evolved into amphibians, which evolved into reptiles, which evolved into mammals, some of which evolved into man. All of life goes back to a common ancestor. Another way to express the evolution idea is this geologic column, the geologic time scale. The idea behind this is a column of fossils, but it's really a column of time. And the idea is that this evolved from non-life, and this evolved into that, and into that, and into that, and over time, you keep on going up and finally get to man. And well, if you start up here at the top, that's where recent fossils are, but you go down, you finally get into the dinosaurs, and before the dinosaurs, it's a column of time. As you'll see in the book, the fossil record does not look like this at all. This is not even hinted at by the real fossil record. This is presented in the textbooks as if it were a presentation of fossils. It is a lie. The fossils look very, very, very different from this. The fossil record looks like a record of a huge worldwide flood that did this. And we win on that one too, but they just don't know it yet. They just don't know it. But the fossil record looks very different. Evolution, I'm convinced, is more of an idea about who we are than where we came from. We are animals, evolved from the animals. In fact, here's a textbook in use out, I think, in California. Little Johnny, you are an animal, and you share a common heritage with earthworms. This is evolution with a vengeance. I got to ask you, does this kind of information do little Johnny any good? This is devastating stuff. Here's another one. Your inner fish. We belong to a highly specialized group of bony fishes. We are fishes, whether we like it or not. Yeah. I was, when we checked in the motel a while ago, the girl was there. She said, "Oh, Institute for Creation, what's that?" I said, "Well, that's creation versus evolution." I said, "We're a Christian group that we do creation instead of evolution. We think the scientific evidence supports creation more than evolution." And I'm teaching at the seminar, and we're going to be teaching that you did not come from a fish. Now, I've used that kind of line on hundreds of people, you know, sitting next to me in the airport, and, you know, that's kind of how I start the witnessing process. We don't think you came from a fish. And in almost every case, they all say, "Oh, I never believed that." Nobody believes they came from a fish. But everybody is taught that. It's interesting. The creation model is quite different. The creation model is, well, there's a lot of variety, but dogs is dogs and dogs is not cats. And there's variety among the dogs and variety among the cats, but the basic idea behind creation is, well, it's two main points. If you take a note, these two points. Sudden appearance, that, well, as you come up that fossil record, as you come up that geologic time scale, well, say with dogs, there's a lot down here, there was no dogs. And then suddenly there are dogs and lots of dogs. And they're dogs at the start. They suddenly appear. There's no clue that dogs evolved from something else. Once dogs got here, they did a lot of variety and variation. But dogs is dogs, and that's it. And Dogs vary, but variety is not evolution. Adaptation is not evolution. Sudden appearance. This is the basic definition of the creation model. Sudden appearance and stasis. Once a particular type got here, it stayed that way. It was stationary. It was static. They stayed dogs. Cats stayed cats. Stasis. They may have varied somewhat, but still within the category of dogs. So sudden appearance and stasis, that's basically the definition of the creation model. Many varieties can come from a single kind, but one kind never becomes a different kind, as evolution requires. Variety, yes. Evolution, no. I think it's frustrating sometimes for non-scientists to see that there is this body of data out there, and these scientists attack the data, and yet they interpret it differently. They tell different stories about its past. You can't tell a different story about its present, because it's right there, and you see it, and you see the same thing. Both sides see the same thing. I mean, the data are the data. But yet, there are at least two different interpretations of the data when we're talking about origins. And it's frustrating. Where do these different interpretations come from, or different stories about their history? Well, I think the most important part about the decision-making process is the assumptions that go into it. If a person begins the study of the data with an assumption set that is basically naturalistic, that there is no supernatural, and if that's your religious bias, then you can look at the data and tell an evolutionary story about it. You can do that. That's what most people do in the schools, school systems. I'm not convinced that most scientists believe in evolution. I think it's about 50-50 in my book. But say 50% of scientists believe in evolution. Certainly 99% of university professors believe in evolution. But if you start with that religious perspective, you can tell an evolutionary story about the data. But if you start from this perspective, that the biblical model is true, that creation, fall, flood really happened, they're really facts of history, and affected the world, then you can look at the data and tell a creationist story about it. Since science has to do with observation, that's what scientists do, is make these observations. We can't go back in time and observe either creation or evolution. They're neither one of them happening now. And what's happening now is just adaptation. Mutations happening now, but that's not evolution. It's not creation. It's stasis is what we see now. But I can't prove to you scientifically that the creation model is true. I can't prove to you that the evolution model is false, although I clearly believe it is false and this one is true. What I can say, and what I do say, is that this way of thinking is so far superior to this way of thinking. It fits the science better. It fits the evidence better. It's more intuitively correct. It shoots itself in the foot less. The creation way of thinking and the creation interpretation is the one that works better than the other, as long as we're not appealing to the authority of Scripture, which is kind of not proper in a scientific sense. But you know where I'm going. Between Christians, we can make that assertion. Scripture does say it over here, and so I believe it. But look how well it works. In fact, that's kind of the way that we do at ICR. We don't try to prove the Bible. The Bible doesn't need our help. The Bible's just flat true. It just needs to be believed and obeyed. But if it is right, it's got to work. And let me show you how well it does work. When we go to the scientific evidence, let me show you how well it works. And that's how we'll talk tonight. The geologic column, I mean, this is God to the secular mind. I mean, this is really important. I wonder, is there another interpretation of the fossils as they really are? Could it be that this array of fossils, such that it is, I mean, this is not a correct array, but the array that it is there a different interpretation? Could it be due to the great flood of Noah's day? All these fossils are in sedimentary rock, sediments laid down by moving water. And I suspect, you know, it has to do with the flood. Let's test that a little bit. If the flood happened the way the Bible says it happened, if we just let the Bible do its own talking, if the Bible is our authority, then that flood was worldwide. And it covered the mountains. And it would have restructured the earth's entire surface. And if that kind of flood really happened, it would have deposited most of the world's fossil-bearing rock. Fossil-bearing sedimentary rock. If the flood did happen the way the Bible says it happened, it laid down the rocks and fossils. But if the flood made the fossils, there were no geologic ages. The flood is the real key. I mean, the flood is the key. That's why that groundbreaking book, The Genesis Flood, was so world-changing. When it came out and just demonstrated that the flood can be understood and defended. And, man, it just had a tremendous impact. Because, well, the flood is just the real key. Well, in thinking about these two ways of thinking about history, the fossils are a good test case. Because the fossils have that water-related stuff, and it has the history-related stuff. And the way evolutionists think about the fossils is that the fossils are the remains of animals which evolved by natural processes like natural selection and were buried in watery sediments over great ages. Now, is not that not the way the evolutionists think about this? Well, the creationists have the same fossils. We have exactly the same fossils. But we think about them a little differently. We think of the fossils as the remains of animals. I mean, we're trying to be parallel here. The fossils are the remains of animals that were created by God and were buried rapidly in watery sediments by the great flood of Noah's day. We just have a different story that we tell about the fossils. Neither side saw the fossils laid down. We're trying to reconstruct history here. And the Christian has the Bible as the guide. We have the lab book of one who saw history and did it himself. And he told us about it. And the fossils can be a good test case. The fossils. Fossils. Speaking of those fossils, evolution says that each type, if all things came from a common ancestor, then each type descended through ancestral types, through transitional forms, these in-between forms between a fish and an amphibian. There should be a lot of transitional forms, and these transitional forms should be represented by the fossils. Well, the creationists would say differently. Well, to draw it here. I mean, if a fish became an amphibian, there ought to be some fish that kind of becomes more amphibian-like and more amphibian-like until it's finally able to walk on four legs. And as we come up the strata, there ought to be this transition, these transitional forms. Well, this is a picture of the most amphibian-like fish, and that's the most fish-like amphibian. But these transitional forms are hypothetical. They just don't exist. They're just not there. Creationist says that each type, fish and amphibians, and each type was created separately and fully formed without the transitional forms. These transitional forms never existed and should not be found as fossils. The fact is we don't find them as fossils. Evolutionists have to tap dance around that. But the fact is, we don't find these transitional forms as fossils. And that's what the creationist predicts, because we say they never existed. Evolution says they did exist, they just didn't get preserved. Stephen Jay Gould, who until he died a few years ago was really the leading evolutionary spokesperson. He's a Harvard professor, Harvard paleontologist, a real brand name evolutionist. But he was a good scientist. I love to read his science articles. I'm sorry that he's gone because he wrote such good stuff. He was a good scientist. But he admitted, he's a thoroughgoing atheist, thoroughgoing evolutionist, thoroughgoing anti-Christian, anti-creationist. He was not a nice man, but he was a good scientist. And he admitted that the extreme rarity of transitional forms in the fossil record persist as the trade secret of paleontology, or the study of the fossils. The evolutionary trees that adorn our textbooks have data only at the tips and nodes of their branches, and the rest is inference, however reasonable, but it's not the evidence of the fossils. He admits that these transitional forms are non-existent. If evolutionists, this is the evolutionary tree. In fact, what's his name? I'm going to give a talk here tomorrow on Darwin's Tree of Life. Nelson, Paul Nelson. Yeah, he's going to give a talk on the Darwin's Tree of Life, how it doesn't exist. This is the tree as it should exist if evolution were true. According to Stephen Jay Gould, this is the way it does exist. Just little data out at the tips and nodes of the branches. And these branches aren't connected. Well, my evolutionary colleagues, they say, Morris, there's no evidence for evolution. I say, for crying in the bucket, what kind of evidence are you looking for? Just look at the fossils. Data at the tips and nodes of the branches. Stephen Jay Gould keeps going. He goes on to say, the history of most fossil species includes two features which are particularly inconsistent with gradualism or gradual evolution. The first feature is stasis. The second is sudden appearance. Have you ever heard those two words before? That's the definition of creation. Guys, this is a wonderful time to be a Bible-believing Christian and a creationist. I mean, the evidence is so strong in our favor. There's just no room for Christians to doubt anymore. I mean, it's just overwhelming. Stasis and sudden appearance. Stephen Stanley, Stephen Gould's partner in the whole concept of punctuated equilibrium, he says, the known fossil record fails to document a single example. Fails on a single example. That means less than one. Well, how many is less than one? That's zero. And that's what we're working with here. The fossil record, the known fossil record is zero transitional forms of basic body style evolution, of changing body styles, and hence offers no evidence that the gradual evolution can be valid. So he proposes then punctuated evolution, that it went so rapidly that it left no fossils. Well, the fossil record fails to document evolutionary change. You just don't see it. But if the fossil record doesn't document evolutionary change, what does it document? What are the fossils trying to tell us? Okay? Let's see if we can discern a positive message from the fossils. Well, one is stasis. Stasis, what's that? What's that fossil? That's a clam. What does it look like? It looks like a clam. If this is a 100-million-year-old clam, why does it look so much like today's clams? I mean, it looks like a clam. There's lots of clams in the fossil record. They look like clams. There's some clams with variety, but they're clams. Where is the evolution? The fossils exhibit stasis. Things stay the same. They're static or stationary. They don't undergo evolutionary change. Well, that fossil is a fossil of a crocodile. They say it's 200 million years old. But what does it look like? It looks like a crocodile. It's recognizably a crocodile. Where is the evidence of change? Oh, there's a paddlefish. It looks just like the paddlefish that paddle around the Great Lakes today. the fossils show abrupt appearance. There's no paddlefish down here, and finally there's paddlefish, and they're paddlefish, and they vary, and they're paddlefish, and they go all the way up into the present. There's paddlefish today. Abrupt appearance. They say this fossil is 300 million years old, but it looks just like today's paddlefish. There's no evidence of any basic kind changing into another basic kind. You see kinds, and you see them stay the same, but that's not evolution. Fish look just like fish. There's a catfish. You ever been catfishing? There's a modern catfish. There's a fossil catfish, and they look the same. There's a stingray. Looks like a modern stingray. Where's the evolution? I mean, we could do this forever, and I'm going to do it until you're tired of it. There's a squid. There's a squid. There's another fossil squid. Looks just like a modern squid. I mean, squid, there's a lot of squids in it. Well, what's that? Yeah. It's a lobster. What's that? Looks just like a modern dragonfly flying around in your garden. In 300 million years, there hadn't been any change at all. Where is the evidence for evolution? It's not in the fossils. The fossil evidence is for stasis. Got it? Who's that? That's a cockroach. For crying out loud, cockroaches haven't changed in 250 million years. Ooh. There's a beetle. 50 million years. I mean, it's just all kinds of things. There's a stink bug, and it hadn't changed. There's a frog. There's another frog, a fossil frog, and it looks like a frog. Surprise, surprise, it looks like a frog. There's a snake fossil. It looks like a snake. By the way, what kind of animal evolved into a snake if you're an evolutionist? I mean, there's a big change between a snake and everything else. There ought to be some transitional form somewhere, don't you think? They say that lizards crawling around on the ground lost their legs and became snakes. Well, they can say it. But is it so? As Stephen Gould used to chastise his fellow evolutionists because he says they're telling just-so stories. Remember the just-so stories? Rudyard Kipling wrote a whole bunch of just-so stories. He says how the elephant got its trunk. He said he told the story about some animal was down by the stream and an alligator jumped out and grabbed his nose and pulled and pulled and he pulled and he pulled and he got a big long nose and that's how the elephant got its trunk. And it happened just so, dearly beloved. That's the just-so story. They can tell stories, but where's the evidence? Or as the commercial goes, where's the beef? What non-snake became a snake? There's another snake. Here's a turtle. It seems to me that snakes and turtles could be an excellent test case for evolution, because if evolution is true, then snakes and turtles, they each evolved from something else. But the question, what non-snake evolved into a snake? The same question, what non-turtle evolved into a turtle? I mean, it's just different. It's different. They say, well, the ribs just got thicker and thicker and thicker and finally fused together. Well, they can say it. But where's the evidence? Where are the transitional forms? We see a lot of turtles in the fossil record. They fossilize well, obviously. And they're... Every time we find a turtle fossil, you know what it is? It's a turtle. Surprise, surprise.
There's a bat. It's the oldest known bat fossil, so they say. And it's a bat. It's a bat. Now, the fossils do show variety. This is an ammonite fossil. This is a very common type of fossil. And there's a lot of ammonites. There's just a lot of variety among ammonites. But they're either ammonites or they're not ammonites. What non-ammonite became an ammonite? See where I'm going with this? I mean, some of them have kind of a coiled shell. And some of them have a... There's some still alive today. This is the chambered nautilus. And there's really not much change to amount to anything. Yeah, evolutionists point to certain changes. Well, I can go with that. I mean, change happens. But change is not evolution. In fact, I look out at you people and I see some change among you. But that's not evolution. You're all people. Got it? Change happens, but that's not evolution. Some are big, some are small. Some have a smooth shell, some have a ribbed shell. You know, evolutionists make a big deal about smooth and ribbed shells on ammonites. See, that proves evolution. No, it doesn't. It proves variety. This is not much different from brown hair and blonde hair. I mean, it's just not much different from that. There's that clam I showed you a while ago. Looks like a modern clam. Have you ever eaten a raw clam? I was over in Korea one time and they gave me some to eat. And it's a high insult to refuse. I don't care. I refused. I mean, there's a cricket. There's a scorpion. There's a housefly just laid her eggs. I mean, these are just like the modern organisms. I told you I was going to make you sick of looking at these things. There's a lizard. Looks just like a lizard. These are in amber. It's the same with plants. There is variety. Yes, there is variety. But recognizably, you can place them in modern groupings. There's a centipede. Ooh. There's a spider. There's a termite. Here's another thing about... There's my clam. Texas is clams. Texas is a real clam factory. There's just a lot of clams down in Texas. There's a lot of clams. I found this clam in Central Texas there. And there's a big, you know, there's an outcrop of, you can just pick clams out of the wall until your arms get tired. I mean, just lots of clams. And notice that this clam, the two halves of the clam are still together. When a clam is living, it can burrow, it can do open and shut, and there's a muscle that holds the two sides together. And clams can do a lot of stuff. He can burrow down in the sand, and he can do a lot of stuff. But when you disturb the clam or the clam thinks it's in danger, it snaps shut. It clams up. I mean, that's where we get this clam is all clammed up. He's protecting himself with his hard outer shell. And this clam and the millions of other clams in this outcrop, they're all clammed up. Something is endangering them. And if you bury a clam suddenly in sediments, it'll just burrow right out. It can tell which way's up, and it just burrows out. But these clams were all buried in there together so tightly they couldn't even burrow out. There's just like a stack of marbles in there. And clams don't live that way. This is not a life assemblage in there. It is a a burial and death assemblage. I think this clam was buried alive. It was buried still in this protection mode. Once a clam dies, then the muscle relaxes and it opens up and the birds eat the insides. I mean, that's the way it happens. But these clams all were buried alive and still in that burial mode as we find them. Now, they're dead, obviously, now, but they were buried alive, fossilized in that position. Lots of interesting fossils. Here's a rapid fossilization. This is a fish fossil in the process of eating another fish. Now, how long does it take for a fish to swallow lunch? I mean, this guy was buried so rapidly by something so catastrophic where his sediments were just dumped in on this fish in the process of swallowing that he didn't even finish swallowing, and they both fossilized down in there. Now, most fish are not fossilized in the process of eating another fish, but there's quite a few fossils that have been found like this. There's another one. I mean, there's just a lot of them. They're not the majority of them, but there's a good number of them. Caught in life episodes. I mean, they're living and buried now. And were buried so deeply they couldn't even flip and wiggle out. And they died right there. I think it's the flood. I think it was the flood. And the floods just washing in just great volumes of sediments. And just boom, and there it is. And these things are trapped. They're suffocated and they're trapped and they can't even get out. I think that's the evidence that we're seeing. I can't imagine what else evidence we're looking at. These fossil fish, even if they're not eating another one, they're all just so precisely preserved. I mean, it's just little tiny bones. And I found them. You smell them, and they smell like a dead fish. I mean, it's just right there. Here's a marine reptile in the process of giving birth. Here's the baby reptile exiting the birth canal. I mean, how long does that take? Well, it does take some time, I guess. But this creature is strong enough to swim anywhere. How did it get trapped this way? The only way I can imagine is just a dump of sediments on top of it, and it's just trapped and buried, and there it is, and now we find it. Just a dump of sediments. That's the flood. That's what the flood would do. Got it? Oh, the fossils show mass mortality, just huge clumps of these fossils all piled together. From trilobites to little baby dinosaurs there. I mean, they're just buried in mass. Of course, fish are sometimes fossilized by the trillions. There's the mussels. I mean, it's just the country of Morocco is just one whole big fossil bed. These are all ammonites. Some are coiled, some are straight. But they're all ammonites. They're the same kind of creature. They're like a squid with a shell. And these things, by the way, notice that these pointed ones have a favored orientation. They're all kind of pointing upwards, indicating that there's moving fluids, moving sediments around them and orienting them. In relation to the direction of current. This is the country of Morocco. Something watery, something just with dump of sediments, something in moving in a preferred direction. I think we're talking about Noah's flood. And the evidence is for a flood that fits the description as given in Scripture. Of course, we know about dinosaur fossils. This is Dinosaur National Monument in Colorado, Utah. Just a whole mountainside of dinosaur fossils. Oh, man. And these dinosaur fossils, most of them are just ripped apart. And a lot of the bones are broken. They're a piece of one bone. And from, one bone from hundreds of different dinosaurs, a few dinosaurs are rather complete, but most of them are just dismembered.
evolutionists say, well, this was a stream at flood stage. But the map of the Morrison Formation, which this is, covers several states. I mean, what kind of stream are we talking about here? What a wonderful time to be a Bible-believing Christian. The fossils, bottom line, the fossils show catastrophic deposition. In fact, here's an interesting one. This was a paper published a couple years ago by a scientist out in California. He noticed that some of these dinosaur fossils, whenever they're found with their neck arched back. And he says this is typical of asphyxiation. This thing strangled. It died. It was buried alive. Now, he's a rather rabid anti-creationist. And he certainly wasn't trying to promote Noah's flood. If he knows now that I'm using his stuff to promote Noah's flood, he'll probably come shoot me. But no, I take that back. Don't put that on the tape. But he would not be happy. But Struthiomimus, well, it was found about, you know, 100 or more than 100 years ago, is a wonderful fossil. It was fairly complete. Usually dinosaur fossils, when they're found, they're just pieces. They're just a piece of one bone or just one or two bones. But to find the whole carcass there is really quite well rare. But whenever you do find the carcass there, it almost always is gasping for air. I don't know how to explain this. In fact, I'm not sure I know how to understand it. But if, say, that you suddenly were hanging in a tree and dropped out of the tree, and oh, you landed in a quicksand pit, and you're stuck there, and up to your knees, you can't move, and you're sinking, and now you're up to your hips, and you can't move anything, and you're struggling, and you can't really struggle, you can't move a thing. And then it's coming up and up, and finally it's, you're gasping for air and try to do that kind of thing. You know, you're reaching back trying to gasp for air. That's what I think this is going on. Now, I don't think Struthiomimus fell in a quicksand pit. I think he's standing there and the sediments are falling around him. But it has the same effect of just being buried up and rapidly up, and now he's gasping for air and he's struggling and he can't even move anymore. And I think that's what we're seeing. But a lot of the dinosaur fossils are like this. Here's actually, we have this fossil on the wall at ICR. If you're ever down there, come visit us. This is a really nice fossil. This is a fossil of a dinosaur. And it's right next to a fish, a sturgeon-like fish. I mean, I don't know what a dinosaur is doing next to a sturgeon. Well, I think they were buried together. They didn't live together, but they're buried together. But even that sturgeon, you know, when a fish dies, it just looks like a dead fish. It looks like a dead sock sitting there. But when a fish is alive, it's twisting and twisting, and this is twisting and flipping and just got trapped in a flip position. This is not an easy death for that sturgeon. The dinosaur, he's reaching back for air himself. This is a death zone. This is a horrid death. What you're looking at is just horrid stuff. By the way, Archaeopteryx, the poster boy for evolution, essentially every Archaeopteryx fossil is doing the same thing. Every one of them, arching back. And these are birds. But it's, you know, they're crow-sized birds. They're not dinosaur-sized birds. They're just little crow-sized birds. But every one of them is arching back, gasping for air. Every one of them. How many is everyone? That's all of them. I mean, there's a trend here, I guess. Here's another one. They're all doing this. There's only been about 8 of these things found. And they're all doing this. All that are complete enough to know. There's another one. He's doing it. And, you know, there's just a lot of these. I can't even say this guy's name. Sinoceropteryx. He's doing the same thing. And there's Microraptor. He's doing the same thing. And there's, oh, well, that's different. But this death pose is the rule in the fossil record.
This is the way dinosaurs fossils, when there's a carcass there, that's what you're looking at. You're looking at a thing that was buried alive and died by drowning. Drowning as sediments piled up around him. Man. I hope this not only gives you a feel for how creation is superior to evolution, but it also should give you a real appreciation for the horror that was Noah's flood. I mean, this was a kill episode. It was a death episode. This was a judgment of sin. And how much does God hate sin? He hates it this much. Oh, man. Creationists have a good message for the world. The world needs this message. Got it? Well, here's a fossil I want to show you. This is Sioux. This is the big T-Rex fossil named Sioux, found in, I think, North Dakota or South Dakota, but eventually purchased by the Chicago Field Museum and is on display in the main lobby of the Chicago Field Museum. If you're ever up there, you got to go see it, because Sioux it was found 90% complete, which is really rare for dinosaurs. Usually it's much less than 90% of the bones, but they were able to reconstruct it and put it back together. But Sioux, and seeming like all the dinosaur fossils, died a horrible death. Let me tell you a little bit about Sioux. Sioux, found nearly complete, and by studying the bones, they were able to tell that she was at least 300 years old at the time of death. Well, reptiles, the large reptiles are, even the Galapagos sea turtles sometimes get 300 years old today. Reptiles and the crocodiles tend to be very old. The oldest crocodiles are very old, older than mammals, older than people for sure. And we know that before the flood, people lived 1,000 years. So maybe some of these reptiles were very old too. But Sue was at least 300 years old. It's hard to tell, but at least, I mean, she was quite old. But she lived in horrid pain. She lived a miserable existence. We know that because she had wounds in her jaw. Another T-Rex had chomped on her head, and actually, I mean, this is the pattern of T-Rex teeth here. Holes in her jaw by another T-Rex and punctured her jaw. She survived that, because we can see where it healed up around the puncture wounds, but they had abscessed. And have you ever had an abscessed tooth? Ooh. She had several, many abscesses in her jaw. She could probably hardly chew. Oh, man, that just gives me the willies just thinking about it. But it gets worse. Another fight, she had several of her ribs had been broken. These are the ribs, and this is where they naturally healed, where the bone built up around it. They hadn't been set, but they had set themselves and grown around themselves. These are the broken bones here. And just every breath was like a knife stabbing her in the lungs. I mean, this is her life, however long she lived after these fights. And worse than that, she had her femur, her thigh bone, had been broken. And you can see where that grew back and healed. I mean, she survived these attacks, but it wasn't much of a life. She lived a horrible life. And you know, she couldn't put much weight on this thing. How could she get food? How could she eat? How could she breathe? I mean, she was just... But she died in the flood. Didn't die of the wounds. She died and was buried in the flood. I wonder, the Bible says that after God created all the animals and man, he called it very good. This could not have predated day six. I mean, this was not millions of years ago, because God says even the dinosaurs, even Sue, was at that point very good. I think a better understanding that this was due to Adam's sin. And that sin, Adam's sin, ruined everything. Now, dinosaurs don't sin. Dinosaurs don't sin. But Adam sinned, and Adam ruined all of God's very good creation. And now the whole creation groans and travails in pain together until now. Well, I can see I'm going to be overtime. So, get used to it. that fossil column I was showing you, most of those are vertebrate fossils. But the real fossil record, 95% of all fossils are marine invertebrates, primarily shellfish, like clams. I mean, it's just clams. There's clams. There's a lot of clams, but no mammals. But that column shows vertebrates, dinosaurs, amphibians, mammals. It's a lie. It's just not the way the fossil record is. It's a statement of evolutionary propaganda. Of the 5% that's left, most of those are plants. Of the little tiny bit that's left, well, that's fish. And of the little tiny, tiny, tiny bit that's left, that's insects. And of the little teensy, tiny bit that's left is all of the land vertebrates all put together, the dinosaurs, the mammals, everything all put together. And it's just even a tiny fraction of 1%. And most of those are just a piece of one bone. And there's another thing about the real fossils record. The marine fossils, the ocean fossils, are all found on the continents. They're found in Kansas. They're not found in the Pacific. Does that tell you that something different was going on in the past? The fossil record doesn't look like evolution. It looks like somebody very angry with what's going on the continents picked up the ocean and destroyed the continents, and we have that record. That's what it looks like. Did you ever hear that before? Yeah, you read about it in Scripture, don't you? Here's a marine fossil. I like this fossil. This was found. This is an ammonite. You crack it open, and inside is an ammonite. It was found on Mount Everest, the tallest mountain in the world, 29,000 feet. Marine fossils up on top. This was not found at the top, but it was most of the way up. Right at the top, I'm told, are clam fossils. Now, I'm not saying that the flood washed over Mount Everest. All those sediments were laid down at the bottom of the flood ocean, but then buckled up into high mountains at the end of the flood. And so these ocean bottom sediments became high mountains. But there's the evidence. The oceans were at what are now high elevations. Well, I got several more fossils to show you. Will you put up with me a couple more minutes? These layers are thought to represent tens of millions of years in length, all of them. And this is a column of time. So this is 50 million years, that's 30 million years, that's 10 million years. But sometimes there's one fossil that actually transgresses several of those layers. It's called a polystrate fossil. And one fossil goes through several layers, through many millions of years of time, so they say. There's a better way to look at it. There's a better way to look at it. And it's not the evolutionary time scale. Sometimes there are anomalous fossils. Well, that's a human artifact. You know where that was found? That was found in a layer of coal in Oklahoma, thought to be about 300 million years old. What's a human artifact doing in coal? Guys, this is a wonderful time to be a Bible-believing Christian. Got it? Here's another one. Oh, 200 million years old. Here's one of my favorite ones. This is a bronze bell. Still rings. Tinkle, tinkle, tinkle. It is found in 300 million-year-old coal in Pennsylvania. Here's an interesting fossil. It comes from the state of Washington. It's a piece of petrified wood. Petrified wood, there's a lot of petrified wood, no big deal. But this is a petrified fence post. A farmer put a fence out in his field, and the part of the fence post that was underground, petrified, well, above ground it rotted away, but now he found this one, and then he found the stub fence post along the fence line. It doesn't take millions of years to petrify wood, like I was taught. This is, you know, a human artifact. This is a split rail fence post. Here's an interesting fossil. It's found out in Texas, where evidently some cowboy was murdered and they buried his body off the side of the road. He was murdered around 1950, because this kind of boot was made around 1950. But when they were widening the road or something, they found this guy in here. But as they dug him up, they found that, well, the boot was still there. It was treated leather, and so it was leather, but the leg had petrified, or it had calcified. We call this guy the Limestone Cowboy. Well, let me summarize. The main points of my book, The Fossil Record, which are, you know, some of these points I've covered here tonight. The main points is that the fossils show sudden appearance of each basic type. It doesn't show gradual transition of one type into another. And then once those types get here, they show stasis. It shows complexity at the start. Evolution says it starts simple and goes complex, but no, it was complex at the start. The fossil record does show extinction, but extinction is the opposite of evolution. There's no ancestor-descendant relationship in the fossils. I make a point in the book that the fossil record is essentially complete. In fact, it looks like almost everything that was alive before the flood essentially got fossilized. I mean, we still have it. It was a complete world zone that we have. And by the way, in the lowest level down here at the bottom, the Cambrian explosion, all of the phyla, all of the basic body styles are there. At the start, at the bottom of the Cambrian period, all of the fossils are there, right there at the start. Even vertebrates are there at the Cambrian explosion. And you and I are vertebrates. We're a special category of bony fish, remember? Vertebrates are there at the bottom in every basic category of everything. Where's the evolution? The evolution is, well, it's just a fig Newton of their imagination. Many fossils are found throughout the column. There's clams found in every one of those layers, and there's clams alive today. Where is the evolution? Most fossils are marine invertebrates, and these fossils died catastrophically and violently, and there's no complete ecosystem that we find in any fossil deposit. It's a shamble that they can't reconstruct habits from looking at the fossils, looking at bits of dead ones. Mixed habitats, these fossils, marine fossils found mostly on the continents. Well, all of these points are documented in the book, and we've talked about half of them here this evening. But the fossils give strong evidence for the biblical story. But if Noah's flood was involved, and if the flood happened the way the Bible says it happened, if it was worldwide and mountain covering, then it would have deposited the world's fossil-bearing rock. You couldn't keep that kind of flood from depositing the fossil-bearing rock. That's what that flood would do. And if it laid down the fossils, those fossils which are used by evolutionists to prove evolution, but if the flood really did it, then they're wrong and they have no evidence left. If you take the fossils away, they got nothing. We win in a no-hitter. I'm convinced evolution is a religion, the religion of naturalism. Darwin is its saint. Evolution is a religion. And they worship the creation more than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Well, we've covered a lot of ground, and I've gone over time, as is always the case, says my wife. But we started a little late, too. Thanks, guys.
We did start a little late. John said to me beforehand, if I go a little over time, I don't have to take any questions, right? Well,
yeah.
How about one question, John? Will you take one question?
I'll take one question.
Okay. Who's got a good question on the fossil record?
If I get to decide whether or not it's good.
Yeah.
If it's hard, I'll decide it's not so good.
Nice and loud.
Good question. Yeah. I've got a whole section in my book on that, that these fresh dinosaur fossils, these dinosaur fossils have been found with fresh tissue, with blood cells and blood vessels. And now they're finding them with protein molecules and even some DNA. These things are known to just decay. You know, there's just no way we can imagine that they would last thousands of years, but they say it's millions of years old. And in fact, in my book, I made a prediction. I talked about Mary Schweitzer's discovery of this dinosaur fossil and then how she backed it up with finding some more, and she's defended herself and really, you know, shown that these blood vessels and stuff are really real. But I predicted that now that the door is open, that people will be coming forward and saying, there'll be a lot of this, that people find fresh fossils. And in my book, then I list several. But I started to revise my book and put in a whole chart, but it's got to be so big and unwieldy that suddenly there are a lot of fresh fossils that have been found. There's been a squid fossil found. And the squid, there's a little sack there that was the ink sack. And there's still ink. And they drained it out, took that ink, and drew a picture of the squid. How could that be 200 million years old? Cut me some slack. There are fossil feathers that still have the iridescence. And this stuff is known to just decay and be gone in just a very rapid period of time, and there it is. And there's just a lot of these kinds of things found, and so this is a very strong point. In fact, I really didn't get into it much tonight, but Frank Sherwin and I are thinking of writing a book on biological evidence for the young Earth. I think there's a lot to be said there, and this is a wonderful time to be a Bible-believing Christian, guys. You got it? That's the mantra as you take away from the lecture. Okay.